You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction.
It's the Rediscover the Road sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Also up on your home smart speaker. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. The O-Dog and I were out playing wooden sticks today. Beautiful course, beautiful track. The hospitality is top-notch. Always great
take
to get out there.
It wasn't the shots.
Yeah, it wasn't a goat track. It was a good...
No, it's a beautiful spot.
It's dialed in. There's replica holes around the world. But I'll tell you what, on 13, this man pulled up, got his rangefinder, and he dialed in 213 downwind. Tell us about the club selection and when what went through
okay,
your mind?
Hold on
like
a
downwind
second.
Too? So do no, you actor factor that in? Like
there
you're
was,
like
it was 216 uphill into the wind. So playing like 240.
Hayes, don't be stupid. I was right beside you. It was 213 slightly uphill in downwind. It was downwind.
It was playing 215 probably to the number. All right. So it was par five and I hit a pretty decent drive. I mean, I'm 215 out on a par five. That's not bad. These aren't overly long par fives, but I'm in between clubs. Like for me to get there, I gotta pull out a three wood. Like if I hit my three hybrid, I'm probably coming up short. I'm gonna hit a 205, and I'm not gonna get there. So I take out the weapon and I take a little off and I hit a butter cut and I put it to about 12 feet, 15 feet. And all in the air, spin, basically died on the green. It was just a beautiful shot. Beautiful line.
You bumbled a three-wood up there from 213.
And then I wondered if I made it. That's the best part. I'm like, I think I got there. If I didn't, see, I might have to quit.
Is this your Golf Town like setup? Like, did you walk in like you were a billboard for
dialed.
Golf Town too?
He is dialed. The saddest part about the missed eagle putt, he picks his ball out of the hole and he goes, "Gosh damn it! I'm never gonna have a better eagle putt than that again in my life."
I probably won't. I don't remember the last time I had a putt for eagle. Like I'm serious. I've been
in your life,
in my life. Have you ever seen anything like it? It was like a 15 footer for eagle uphill straight, and I pushed the putt and missed it. I birdied it, but I was rattled.
Did you panic? Like was he like? Did you feel the pressure or
no,
what?
No, not really. I just didn't. It wasn't a good putt. I mean, I pushed it and it wasn't a great putt. I had a decent speed, decent pace. Just I missed it, and the truth is I'm not going to get that opportunity again for a long, long time. It's very disappointing. But, hey, listen, I'll take 80, man. For a course I've never played, from the blues, which is not bad for the average golfer, to shoot 80, and I left some strokes out there that I think I could get back the next time I play it.
The one thing you couldn't have done, like, it was such an easy pin placement on the replica Sawgrass Island green, and you folded the sod over it a little bit.
Yeah, I put it in the water.
Actually, you didn't do that.
I hit it okay.
I don't know what you did.
Short.
You just mishit it. Yeah.
I probably took something off it and too much off it, and I missed it. You know, like, it was the third hole, the par three there, that's the replica 12 at Augusta.
And you Jordan Spieth'd it. And as soon as you hit it, I thought of our boy Nicky Faldo.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
That's literally what it was, Noodles. I did the same thing.
How are you having these oh, my goodness shots and you still shot an 80? Like
because every other hole he was dialed in, he just had like the shot on three or four, that part.
Brutal.
It was a skank.
It was. I hit the ground like 3 inches before the ball. It was terrible.
Like there was a hazard in front of the green. It barely got to that. And I'm like, this guy's in for a long day. It's going to be a chop fest. But he was dialed in every other hole.
Well, let me ask you this now. Knowing what you know and what you saw today, what is Brian Hayes' score at the National?
I still think it's 200.
Get real, dude. Like, that's just
an outrageous shot. I'm telling you. 8 over par.
That's right. But I've told you idiots time and time again. There's his skank ball at that course. He cannot carry he's going to hit 30 of them. So he's going to make a 60 on a hole. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
I know that, but I can carry the ball 230 in the air.
Like some of them are 250 into a fan. You got to hit it 275 and you got to nut it.
Yeah,
you cannot do that.
That's a a problem. If it's 275, I can't get off. I can't get off the tees.
Well, I'm not saying 275, but it might be 250 into a strong fan. That's playing 280.
Yeah, I know.
And you don't have that.
I don't
have
that.
You hit 30 tee balls. That turns into a 60 on the hole.
Apparently, this Mike Camilleri can golf.
Oh,
dude,
yeah.
Dude, he's a pro golfer. He shot 75, 76, 73 at the National Club Championships.
That was from the tips with the championship pins, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I was because we saw Cammy last year at the Summit when we were at that tournament with Taggart. And it was, you know, it's such a great tournament for a great cause. And I was on the putting green, and Camilleri was joking. He's like, yeah, he wasn't joking. I think he said O's only beat him once. So we were goofing around. We're talking about golf. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll tell him that you tripped him. And then I talked to O, and I was like, no, that's, like, legit. This guy's actually unbelievable at playing golf.
Cammy's that good, eh?
Just ask him.
Just ask him.
He is. Obviously, if you're shooting 75 from the tips, championship pins, every stroke accounted for at the National.
Some pros do that, right? Like, some guys on the tour do that, right?
Oh, there'd be guys who are barely on the tour who are, like, great, great golfers that would shoot 78 at the National. Shoot 80, 81 if they're slashing it.
Yeah, I played with a pro golfer that shot about 78 there in a tournament, a pro-am.
Yeah.
It's like, it's no joke, man. Like, that's one of the hardest courses. It's the hardest course in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's just the way it is. So if Camilleri's putting up those kind of numbers.
Yeah, that's dialed in.
Yeah, that is like a spectacular golfer. All right, Marcellus Wiley later in the hour. Here is our Jays and MLB analyst here at TSN, Steve Phillips. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great, guys. Good to be with you.
Yeah, you too. Before we get to the Jays and Bichette and everything, let's begin with the Cardinals, where earlier this afternoon, I think Buster Olney had a report that another staff member has tested positive. They've already had their Friday game in Chicago and the South Side postponed to Saturday, but that seems to be up in the air. They've played five games. They haven't played in 2 weeks. They haven't played in August. Like, what happens? What's going to happen here in St. Louis?
Yeah, I think that, the one thing's clear, they're not going to get in 60 games. I mean, you're talking about right now 55 games in 44 days. It's not going to happen. You can't double up games enough. I don't care if you're playing seven-inning games or five-inning games. You can't do it. And so I think that we're just going to have to wait it out, and teams are going to end up being in a position where they're likely going to end up with 60 games. We're going to have to go with winning percentage across the board, whether it's the Cardinals or the teams who are supposed to play the Cardinals who can't make up the games. I think the question is going to come down to, with regard to the Cardinals particularly, but as we get deeper into the season, if there's another team that has an outbreak and there's not enough time to make up some of the games that they lose, you know, they're going to get to a level of what is the minimal amount of games? What's the minimum that a team can play and still qualify for the postseason? Because I know we're using winning percentage, but at some point, if you're only playing 30 games and other teams are playing 60 games, you're playing a different game. You're playing a different season. And your winning percentage isn't equal because there is some part of the rigors of playing every day for the 2 months of the season that's different than playing for 1 month of the season with breaks in between. And so I think that the commissioner's office is going to have to deal with this. There is no manual for it. They haven't negotiated it or discussed it or finalized it yet. You know, and I'm actually writing about this for .ca, but my belief is that they have to come up with a formula that at some point the number of games you play determines what you're eligible to participate in as a postseason team. For instance, my belief is that if a team plays, you know, between 50 and 60 games, then they could still be eligible to win a division, to be the second place team in a division or a wild card team. But if you get less than 50 games and you're from 40 to 49 games, then I think that you're only eligible to qualify as a wild card team with your winning percentage. That it's not the same as playing. You can't play 15 less games and think that you have the worthiness of winning a division. So at that point, you're only eligible to be a wild card team. And if you play less than 40 games, then you need to play the games, but you're not going to the playoffs. You've already been eliminated. And here's the thing. It may sound punitive, but in some way, if you've had an outbreak that has cost you this many games, you violated the health and safety protocol to some degree, and you have some responsibility for it, and you're going to have to live with it in this age. But I think that there's got to be some minimum number of games that teams can play.
How far away, like, what is going to happen? Is Manfred just going to say cards like you're done for the year, or how does that transaction go down?
No, I think we need him to play, and so as soon as they're capable, but I think what has to happen is, you know, it's like when they cut away a tumor, at some point you need healthy skin on the other side. It's the same thing. We, you know, healthy boundaries, we need to get through to where we stop getting positive tests for a number of days before we can reconvene the group together. So I don't think we'll ever be there with the Cardinals. We need them to come back and play, but they may be disincentivized that they're not going to go to the postseason, but so be it. I mean, there are teams that are eliminated all the time that play out the season, and the Cardinals will have to do it. And yes, I feel badly for them. Yes, it's unfortunate. They've had some bad luck, but clearly this spread means that they didn't do some things properly. Now, it doesn't mean that it's all their fault, but I think we're going to have to deal with it. So I don't think we'll ever just say the Cardinals are done. I think at some point we get them to a healthy place and get them back in playing games for everybody else.
Steve, the Jays are at 6-9 right now. Where are you at with them? They're kind of in a position in the schedule where they kind of got to get on a heater here and get some momentum, but I don't feel overly confident that that's going to happen. It seems like a team where their youth is going to have hot streaks, their pitching is going to be up and down, they're just going to kind of hover around mediocrity all year. Is that where you see them, or do you see things kind of turning for these guys?
Well, I think that they can get hot. And so what we've seen is, you know, the way it stands right now, the Marlins, Orioles, and Tigers would make the playoffs. I mean, let that sink in a little bit.
It's nuts.
So, you know, right. And so... So, interesting. I don't think they'll end up making the playoffs, but they got hot early. And you know, so their fan bases are excited. The Blue Jays can get hot. I actually feel like their season just started now that they've gotten to Buffalo. I mean, it really feels like this feels like some level of home to them. It's not home. You know, when somebody asks them, where do you guys go from here? They're going to say, we're going to Buffalo. They're not going to say, we're going home. They're going to say, we're going to Buffalo. But it's at least closer to being a home. And what the Blue Jays front office did, I think, is unbelievable. The level of detail they went to transform that stadium, they didn't cut corners. They tried to make it special, and I think the players really responded. We saw their offense break out. I mean, they scored 16 runs in the last two games for a team that was averaging 3 runs a game for the first 13 games of the season. And so it's a big difference what we've seen. I think that they have a chance. They've got to tighten things up. I think, you know, we're going to have to look at Charlie Montoya's going to have him out early doing some fundamentals, bunt defenses. The base running hasn't been very good. They've got to sort of regroup, but they can make a run in this division right now. Look, it's going to be the Yankees and the Rays are playing much better, but one of the wild card spots may very well be a team that, you know, finish the season at 27-33, 28-32, 29. They can get there, but they've got to, you know, they've got to just start to play a little bit better and pay attention to details. So it feels to me like now that they have a home, they've got a chance to compete in a different way.
With Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst, you know, the pitching outside of last night has not been the issue with the Jays. Their stats have been pretty decent. The bullpen has held up okay. It's been the bats that have been mostly concerning, and they've broken out the past couple of nights. It didn't matter last night, even though they put 11 on the board. They lost to Miami. But Bo Bichette put on a clinic. He went 5-for-5. He had a walk in the 10th, 2 stolen bases, a home run. And you look at his stats now, his OPS is up over 1,000. He has been meeting the hype. Like this, dating back to when he came up, he has met the hype. He's got the swag. He's locked in. He's connecting. He is the man. And how much more is there? Like, where do we go here with Bichette, considering the way he started and how good he's looked ever since he got here?
Yeah, I think it's about consistency now. I mean, look, he's showing on a single day, you know, in single days, let's say, that he's not only does he belong, but he's at times the best player on the field in a day. There's no question. Yesterday, I used to say to my boys when they go out and play, go out there and be the best player on the field. You know, let people walk away that day and say, well, that he was the player. And Bo Bichette does that. You walk away sometimes watching him, yeah, he was the best player out there today. And I think now it comes down to that level of consistency. You know, I interviewed him in the spring, and I said to him, you know, there's and it's really tough to put this on him, but I look at him and think he is to the Blue Jays what Derek Jeter was to the Yankees back in the day. That, you know, the face, the voice, the spokesman, the quote after the game, the responsibility of the captain role with or without the C on the jersey. You know, baseball, we don't often do that, but you know, that it was his team. You know, Jeter, the Yankees were Jeter's team, and it feels to me like the Blue Jays are Bo Bichette's team. Even with Vlad Jr. and all of that coming up, it's his team, and I think this is the start of what's going to be something really special in a career, in a relationship with a city, with a franchise, with an organization. I think in some ways he helps Vladimir Guerrero Jr. work through some of these early struggles because he's taken on some of that pressure and taken it away from him. At some point, the focus may go to Vlad Jr., but I think Bichette's really protected him in that way, and I think that it's the start of what is going to be a phenomenal career.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it, and it feels like it. And this isn't some guy you'd never heard of that came out of nowhere. You know, he was a high draft pick with an MLB name and an MLB history. So I guess we shouldn't be so surprised, but the numbers have been spectacular, and I'm with you. I expect it to continue for a long, long time. When it comes to Charlie Montoyo, I would say he has probably been the focus of the most ire from the fan base here in Toronto through the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season, you know, which is not shocking. I mean, the manager's always coming up when you're a losing club. But he's made some strange decisions. You know, he had Joe Panik hitting DH. He's made some interesting calls with his bullpen. What do you need to see out of him the rest of the season? What does he have to change? What does he have to prove in order to, I guess, stay here for the next 2 or 3 years, if not more than that?
Yeah, so remember, I think a lot of times for the manager, like I would never DH Joe Panik. Like if I'm putting together the lineup for the Blue Jays, I would never DH Joe Panik. And I like Joe Panik. He's a great guy, but, you know, everything else. I like the left-handed bat mixing in. You want to sort of get some balance to your lineup. He's just not a guy you DH. He's not an impactful offensive player. No power, no speed. And so he has to have multiple hits in a game, and usually singles, in order to have the sort of impact that you want. And I don't want that to be my DH. So, look, I think that this is not a season that I think any manager in baseball, like we may not have any managerial changes after this year. It's such a quirky year. And the one thing to remember about Charlie Montoyo is that he's managing a team to win now that isn't necessarily built to win now. And so, you know, you look at it and think, well, I don't understand all the decisions, but, you know, he's taking players who are in a development mode, or should be, and putting them in a win-now mode, and it doesn't always fit the right spot and the right piece and the right situation, but that's a personnel issue, not necessarily a managerial issue. And the other thing is that I think a lot of the decisions, like my guess is that the Joe Panik DH role, that there was somebody in the analytics department who made a suggestion that it might be a good fit for him in this situation, this matchup. You want to get his bat in, but you also want to get the other left-handed bats in the lineup, so here's a way to do it. And so, you know, I think there's usually more to an explanation to a decision like that than just the, you know, how could he possibly put this guy in that spot?
Steve, we had Kyle Dubas, the general manager of the Leafs, kind of address the city. What was your kind of game plan? Stinker season, how would you go about it? And I know you got to address the fans, the media, and kind of take it on the chin, and it's not very fun, but how do you kind of, you got a young group here. If you were the GM, what would be the kind of game plan? You got to try to appease everybody and feel bad for everybody involved, and you got to move forward. What was your game plan as a general manager after you addressed everybody, and how would you move forward?
Now, of course, I never had a stinker season as a general manager to have any real experience along these lines. So I'll just sort of think
about it.
What would you tell yourself? Like, yeah, I got to just deal with this and then move forward?
Right. If I could just hypothetically, you know, if this were to have happened to you.
Right.
So I think the first thing is to accept responsibility. You know, I mean, you're not fooling anybody when you have a bad season. And so you have to accept responsibility for where you are. You have to also, in some ways, lay out expectations about what's going to change and where are you in the process? Is this going to be a quick change? Is this going to be a commitment that we're going to turn it around quickly, which means an investment in personnel in some way? And then it's you know, laying out some part of a plan, but not all of it, because you don't want to tip your hand. But to at least, you know, acknowledge where you are, because that's really what people want, is like, are you guys seeing this differently than we are? And if so, then that's a problem. Now, you know, the one thing you have to guard against is you can't play to the fan base. You can be honest.
No, of course.
But if you start to make personnel decisions for PR reasons, you're going to make bad personnel decisions. And I think that so you've got to lay it out, but don't lock yourself into a specific plan, because you know the market's fluid. You know players have choices. You know other teams may or may not make deals. You know players may not be healthy and may not recover in the way. So there's a lot to protect yourself against, but at least acknowledge the disappointment and the commitment, I think, moving forward.
Yep. Well, that doesn't always happen, and you don't always hear that, but I think that's the appropriate way of going about it. We appreciate you delving into a hypothetical for us.
yeah, I appreciate it. Anytime.
As always.
Yeah.
We'll do it again soon.
No, of course not.
Thank you, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
You got it, guys. We'll see you.
Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst. Yeah. Listen, he was in New York, too, like you.
They had some lean years, right?
Yeah, they had some up and down years, for sure.
He said, like, the GM's got to accept responsibility. It always sounds so disingenuous. It's like, you know, that was my fault. But it's like, really? Like, we're talking about, like, we're not talking about a day trade where you got a player for a day. You're talking about long-term deals, big-time money, where they're just things aren't going away. It's
well, you know what? Kyle said on our show yesterday, like, he needed to be better. I guess, should we have followed up and said how? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, I guess I always feel bad for the front office person that has to speak for the team, and it's like, you bring these guys in, you pay them a ton of money. They go out and play. Like, they go out on the ice,
right?
And he's got to stand up there and say, yeah, that's my bad. That one's my bad. That one's my bad. It's
well, which, but that comes with the that if you're
I
the
get
general
it.
Man,
I get it.
That's your job. Like, Kyle's not doing this for free. I'm sure he gets paid a lot of money.
Yep.
Like, you know, I'm sure Shanny makes a lot of money. Like, you know, the hockey business, it's high pressure, but you're in one of the most prestigious positions in all of hockey.
No kidding.
It's
going to
come
it again. He might not be around anymore to be able to even speak to everybody, because no more stinkers. I think that will be a rule going into next year. No more stinkers. No more not qualifying for the playoffs or first-round exits or tanks or blowing games. That's not going to fly anymore.
Well,
no,
I don't know.
I don't think it should. It better not. And the same message better apply to the players, though, too, right? Like, they're really – I understand they want to believe that they're all going to break through. I get it. I look at the talent, too. We all see it. It's like, okay, you got talent. But – you keep saying every year it's learning, 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 and I'm telling you we're going to break through, break through, break through. At some point, maybe you just can't or you won't. And they're going to be given another year. Not everyone. There's going to be turnover, clearly.
Right.
And there has to be some upgrades made. But at some point, they're going to make a decision that, okay, it's not going to click, or not for everyone, or this group just is not capable of making that happen. And I don't think we're going much beyond next year.
Right.
Like, if they miss the playoffs, for sure, then it's a catastrophe. If they make it and they go out in the first again, no one's going to want to hear, you know, anything from them.
Yeah.
It'll just be like, okay, leave town and we'll let you know if you're coming back.
Well,
you
excuses, like that's the thing, you know, excuses, like every team is, Ken Holland had to do it. David Poile, like, you know, we saw Jimmy Rutherford, like they're, you know, every manager is doing these Zoom calls and saying stuff. Like, I don't know, there's people out there judging Kyle, and, you know, I heard Masters say he thought he was chippy. What was Masters saying? Not chippy. What was the word?
I don't know, but a bit defensive,
you know what I mean,
at times.
Defensive and stuff. Like, you know, David Poile was pissed today. Like, you know, he's sitting there going, I expected more from my team. Ken Holland, I think Ken said, you know, we weren't good defensively. Like, there's things we need to work on, continue to work on. Like, every manager is sitting there reflecting on their season when they're sitting there watching other teams in there. You're sitting there watching Montreal Canadiens play last night. They weren't supposed to be in the playoffs. Chicago's playing right now. I mean, they're not going to beat Vegas. Vegas is going to rinse them.
Yeah, it feels that way anyway.
But, you know, like, Chicago was – they're in a retool. They've got an older core, but they've got some really good young players. Like, I think this is all gravy for a guy like Stan Bowman.
Yeah, probably it's going to maybe keep the flies off him a little bit because he has been in the spotlight in Chicago.
And that guy's
won three cups. Yeah, but he's won three cups, and people are calling him out. What do you think is going to happen here when he hasn't won a round in 15 years?
That's true.
Marcellus Wiley coming up on a couple of big contracts being signed, including a couple of big ones in Buffalo that would suggest the Pegula family is willing to spend. And I think that's
Jerry
a big sign.
Jerry Pegula.
So we'll catch up with Marcellus, get his take on that and more. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, so we're getting closer to the NFL season, and a couple of big signings. Tight ends getting paid, man. George Kittle getting paid in San Fran. Travis Kelce getting paid in Kansas City. Like, the Chiefs
deserve it.
They totally deserve it. Like, that is a position that rarely got paid in the past, if ever. But now, Kelce can't say he's the best player on his team. I think Kittle is the best player on San Francisco, and he's certainly the best player on that offense. I mean, there's no doubt. He is a weapon. He blocks. His yards after catch are off the charts, his stats. He's just an all-time great tight end already. He's been in the league for like 3 or 4 years.
You know who makes me sick, Hayes? Like, they don't make me sick, but Pierre LeBrun, like, in Cowboys fans, every year, and I could see how some people say, oh, the Leafs are the same, blah, blah. But the overhype, and they're just like, this is our lineup. Look at this guy. We got that guy. And they suck all the time. I can't stand that.
It's the same thing. It's the exact same thing. Loaded with talent. This is the year, and then it just never happens. You see him on FS1, longtime NFLer. You hear him here all the time. Here's our buddy Marcellus Wiley. What's happening, Marcellus?
Oh, I'm doing great, man. Just listening to you guys laugh at those Cowboy fans. I played for the Cowboys. Trust me, I know how their visions are grander sometimes getting away, brother.
Now, Marcellus, before we get into the transactions, what's the dude up in Seattle thinking, putting the jersey on the girl, trying to sneak her into the hotel as a player? Like, what? You got to come up with a different routine or plan than that.
Yeah, his inexperience showed, brother. I mean,
come on. I would say so.
Look, we've all been there, especially in training camp, man, where you put on your goggles, we call it, when even your teammates start to look cuter. You're like, look, I got to find me a way out. I got to find me some intimacy somehow, some way. And you got to do it the right way still, man. It's just a weird play to dress someone up like they're on the team, they're a part of the organization. What are you doing? Either get your stripes up, which means get in good with security so that they can trust you, slide them a few hundreds, if not a stack, and you're good. I've been in that position before. I paid our security off, and they took care of me, man, but you got to earn your stripes first. Slow down, youngster. Slow down.
Yeah, that is an amateur move.
You fat stack it to security and say you shut your mouth and you know nothing. It's very simple.
That is a veteran move, and he's a rookie for a reason. And that tape, man, I don't generally promote TMZ, and a lot of times I think it's offside journalism, but that's some video I'm willing to check out. Is watching this woman try to get through the front lobby in like a Russell Wilson jersey, in high heels. I guess I have to see it. Like, I want to see what this video looks like.
I'm with you. Whenever I'm Pete Carroll and I need a video to illustrate what desire and determination looks like, I'm putting this video on, man. There's nothing more determined than her trying to fake it in that uniform she's wearing right now just to get to her man. And the rookie who probably won't make it to the final cut, you know how the game goes. You got to make an example of somebody. Just all around, just hilarious.
Well, that's it, right? And we talked about that on a serious note. Like, this is the difference between the NFL and in baseball. In baseball, you wouldn't dare cut the guy. You wouldn't even fine him because the union would fly in day of and say, that ain't happening. That's not how we roll. In the NFL, it's like, now we've got an example. Now we can cut him, and we can say anyone else does something stupid, you're getting cut too. You know, this is how I think the NFL is going to try to keep everyone in line when it comes to COVID.
Yeah, man. I remind people all the time how the NFL game is militaristic. It really borrows a lot of the principles of the yes, sir, no, sir. What are your stripes on your shoulders, authority. we just borrow those bones. And so whenever someone gets out of line, there's really only one savior, is how good are you? And if you're not good enough where they won't make an example of you, everyone knows that it runs downhill. So being a rookie, not having anything on film at the pro level, it's a pretty easy example to set if you want to use it and put it all on him, on his shoulders. Unfortunate, but hey, he knew the consequences before he started it. He just got caught.
So let's get into this position, this tight end position, and how much money is being passed around. George Kittle, he was on the verge of making like pennies, relatively speaking. I think he was making like $700,000 or $800,000 or something this year. It might have been a little bit more than that. But he is an all-pro talent. He's a stud. He does it all. He's the most, you know, I guess Garoppolo is still the most important piece of the puzzle there offensively. He kind of has to be at that position. But beyond that, Kittle is an absolute monster. And his numbers started leaking at what he was looking at. And then all of a sudden, the Chiefs found some money to extend Travis Kelce. And Kelce made a bunch of cash. That's a position that generally does not cash in. Is this unique to those two guys because of how good they are? Or are we seeing kind of something shift in the way money's being spent in the NFL?
Yeah, I think a little from column A and from column B. If you think about it, the security blanket, what a tight end can do in terms of manipulating the defense, and what we've been able to see from those two tight ends and some other tight ends from yesteryear, even in the Chiefs uniform, Tony Gonzalez was a monster to deal with. And I played with another monster, and Antonio Gates with the Chargers. I mean, guys who, no matter how you lined up, you try to eliminate the weapons and you would start on the outside with the receivers, but it's just a natural mismatch when you have a talented tight end. He's too big to deal with the DBs, and he's too quick and nimble to deal with a lot of the linebackers. So it's just a natural disadvantage for any defense to go out there and deal with one of these guys. And now they deserve their payday because they're putting up historic numbers. If you talk about Kittle, especially in his first few years, he had the most receiving yards of any tight end in history. And we're just talking about Tony Gonzalez and Antonio Gates, et cetera.
Right.
So these guys deserve the money. They've been hybrids, certainly slept on in terms of value for many years. But you can look at them as, hey, we talk about receivers as always a deep threat. But the guy who really makes the chains move and lights up the scoreboard has been a tight end position, certainly of late.
Yeah, they can do it all. I mean, they can do it all. I witnessed it live. Kittle, I think he only had one catch, but it was a massive catch against the Packers that closed the game out. And it was third and long, and he just spun. I think he had a nickel on him, and he just said, this is not – you got no shot at me, man. Like, no shot. And sure enough, the chains moved. The game was over. Game was over about 5 minutes into it, to be honest. But he's
right.
A beast. He's a beast. You know, we spoke about one of your former teams in Dallas. Another one of your former teams being the Buffalo Bills. There have been some concerns about their ownership and what they're willing to spend. But I think they've made a couple of big statements over the past week or so. They locked up their head coach, Sean McDermott, to a multi-year extension. And he's done a great job. I mean, they made it to the playoffs twice in 3 years, and prior to that, they hadn't been there this whole century. And they lock up their left tackle, who's a stud, as well. So, you know, what does this say about the Bills and how committed they are and maybe where the Bills are going here?
Yeah, I mean, I could see the commitment when I go back and go to Orchard Park just looking at it, whether it's the surrounding facilities or it's the new athletic complex they have or just the stadium upgrades. You know, I walked those hallways for many years, and you blink and within 20 years it's night and day. And even everything that's happening around the stadium, Western New York, you can just see how revitalized the area is. And that doesn't happen just by happenstance. You have to actually invest in it and have direction. So I think ownership's already checked that box, but now they have a couple other public checks that they can point to and signing the Sean McDermott to a 6-year extension. You talk about a coach who has a quarterback in the same draft class as Lamar Jackson, in the same draft class you talk about with a Baker Mayfield. And it's amazing that we continue to have the soap opera conversation about who is Baker Mayfield, but not so much with Josh Allen in terms of coming to a situation, like you said, only once had they been in the playoffs since I was a Buffalo Bill, and Josh Allen has that arrow pointing up, and you got to give a lot of credit to the stability of this organization and their coaching staff. So I'm loving what I'm seeing out of Buffalo. A lot of smart people are predicting they can finally win a division. Understood that it's because Tom Brady's departure certainly opens up an opportunity for them, but they were on the rise even if Brady were a New England Patriot. So it's going to be fun to watch Buffalo ball this year because I think they're going to do something special.
Yeah, me too. I like them a lot. I mean, they're loaded with talent. It is Josh Allen that's my only concern. I mean, that's really
football.
It.
Yeah.
And it should be. You look at the way he melted that second half in Houston, man. He was dying to give away that game. Like, and he did.
I've never in my football career, and this is funny because I'm a huge Josh Allen fan. The guy is insane. Biggest arm, can move around. It's insane, his skill set. But that meltdown did something to me that I'll always tab in my head mentally. Like, if there's ever another critical situation, I am pessimistic about Josh Allen. I've never seen a quarterback or player. Like, he ran backwards and threw the ball up in the air. Like, just leave me alone a couple of plays. I'm like, I've never seen that before. So I'm with you guys. I'm a little hesitant about going forward.
Yeah, that one scared me. I mean, he's going to have to redeem himself. He's got to get back in the playoffs, and he's got to be composed and poised and get that first W, and you move on. You know, and then no one is going to be pessimistic or questioning you anymore. In terms of home field, before we get you out of here, it seems like, you know, probably about half the teams in the league won't have fans, and maybe half the teams – will have fans, but it won't be capacity. It'll be 20-25%. You think that factors in? Like, do you think those teams with 25% capacity will feel like they have a home field advantage, or is that just, you know, nothing and it won't really factor into the actual outcome of the game?
It's just whatever you think it is. I personally don't think it has any impact, but whether you think it does or you think it doesn't, you're right. You know, whatever that player is, that individual team, it's how much focus and onus you put on that. But in terms of energy, it's funny. I hear a lot of players go to the podium and pander and say what they think the fans want to hear. But I always push back and say, look, no stadium is rocking and loud and electric unless you're making plays. And in the sequence of a crowd going crazy, the first thing that has to happen is you got to do something. And I think that these players are going to have to lock into that mindset of just doing something, making plays, not always worrying about the response and reaction that comes from the crowd. Because I've been in stadiums before where you can hear a pin drop because we weren't doing anything. Watch a low-scoring football game and tell me about how loud the crowd is, man. You can hear people ordering hot dogs and beers. It's like no one cares unless you're making noise with your pads. So players say a lot of things. I understand it. It sounds good. It lands great. But being real, just make somebody feel your pain out there on that field between the white lines. That'll be all the energy and noise you need to go ball out.
Yep, exactly, man. Great stuff as always. We'll do it again next week. Thank you.
All right, guys. Take care up there.
Marcellus Wiley from FS1, longtime NFLer, former Bill, former Dallas Cowboy, and former fat stack to the security guard.
That's a veteran move.
Oh yeah, that's a perfect example. I love those type of comments and those type of stories because that's exactly what is happening. You just don't know it. Like, the average person has no clue. Like, you don't think, you know, Tom Brady's like, hey, Giselle's coming up tonight. Like,
yeah.
And here's cash. She's coming through the back door. You shut your yap.
You don't even have to say that. If you have the appropriate amount, it's a head nod and have a look both together at the wad.
Yeah.
And it's a head shake. And
it's
goodbye.
An envelope. It's an envelope, though, a very thick envelope. Mm-hmm. And you just hand it over and you say, got a guest coming at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Bill will not be aware of it. And that's all you need to know. All right?
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
That is an insight that I love to hear.
You know how that transaction's going.
Oh, yeah. Down. The amount of cash, the bellhops are just, they're making it rain. Oh,
they're driving to work in Lamborghinis right now.
I don't know what the equivalent is out here, but like, You go to the Calgary Stampede and you're trying to get into Cowboys at like 7 o'clock on a Friday night. Those doormen, now I know they had flushed out a bunch because there were some doormen that were making some straight chat.
A fortune.
500. Like, here's 500. Can we get in?
I got six guys here. Here's $100 ahead.
That's
can
one example. In? Like, but think about like extreme examples. Like
New York
Vegas
City.
Is the Vegas in New York.
Vegas,
like,
yeah.
Vegas is the most extreme. Like I have seen guys pay off security guards to skip the line for a cab at 3 in the afternoon.
You're right.
Like, here's
I'm at
a hunch.
The age I wouldn't pay 5 cents to go into a club anywhere in the world.
Oh,
anywhere.
Me neither. Me neither. And with COVID, I'm no chance.
Well,
I have
nowadays.
No
but
I hear you. But it's true. Like, you, Vegas, come on, man. Like, we're coming in and we're all pitching in like 500 cash to get in. Like, guys,
just to get in the building.
Just to get in. That doesn't guarantee you a booth. It doesn't guarantee you anything. It's just, I'd like to come into this club because Tiesto's playing tonight. We have rallied together $3,000 cash. Can we please come in? And the guy will be like, I'll think about it.
We did that. Our group did it. We had to, we greased the palm of a guy to get in because the guy's name was Zed, like Z-E-D or whatever. And we were like, we had the best booth, and it was an afternoon party at that, you know, that day party or whatever in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
They got Wet Republic or something
It was, I can't remember. Encore Beach Club. That's what it was.
Yeah.
So Encore Beach Club, and we had a booth, and there was eight of us, and you have to, you know, spend a certain amount.
Oh, it's disgusting. The money down there, it's just and like, you know, we can mix and match a little bit, but think about like Saudi princes that are flying in.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, yeah, we're gonna spend $5 million this weekend in Vegas.
Yes.
Yeah,
I will assume
care.
The roasted turkey for the weekend and there's $4 million.
It is just straight cash. And
I don't understand. I don't care how much money you have. Why does it cost $1,500 for a bottle of Grey Goose?
It's ridiculous. And if you were to go to a small town in Tennessee, it would cost $15.
If I'm a female, I'm shoving one in my purse and I'm going in there and saying, this is my Grey Goose.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just getting old. I don't get it.
Well, that's probably
but
part
you're,
of it.
You're right. Like, you look at that menu and you've got to spend $3,000 or something at the table.
$1,500
for
a bottle of Grey Goose where your goon buddies are going to drink it, one drink each? Like, come on.
It is ridiculous.
No, it's outrageous. Vegas is not normal. It's ridiculous.
It's not. But what would you do for life to be normal and us to be sitting in Vegas talking about this? Even contemplating, like, hey, let's see if we can get a table at Tao tonight or something.
Hayes, thing we didn't do in Vegas, Hayes, is what we did today. Like, we had all morning. We didn't tee it up one time.
Yeah, we should have probably teed it up.
Like,
but
we could have played Wind Golf. We could have played Shadow Creek. We could have, I don't know, we were way off base on that
But we were, the show was on at 1 o'clock. I mean, that's the only, like, you're right. But do you want to be getting up at 6 a.m. and going to play golf in Vegas?
Yes, I do. That's all I do now. I'm up at 6 a.m. every day.
Yeah. Well, I hear you, but we weren't living that life. It's not like we didn't do anything crazy in Vegas at all. We went to a Leaf game. That's the craziest thing we did.
We went to a Leaf game in a country bar for an hour.
Yeah.
And we hit the tables a little bit and then did the show. I mean, we were there to do the show, and that's what we went to the wedding, which was obviously great.
Oh, yeah, the wedding.
Very
we
fun.
Did the wedding.
Yeah, the wedding was awesome. But anyway, yeah, now you got me thinking, you're right, Noodles. Like, the idea of even throwing out a text, like, chain and being like, let's get a boys' trip going, it's not even a possibility. You can't talk about it right now.
You're right.
It's just a waste of your time. All right, we'll wrap up the show. Tee up tomorrow. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050. So I just saw it become official that for the first time in his career, year 17, LeBron James has led the NBA in assists per game. 10.2 assists per game. He leads the NBA. He will finish the season atop that list. That's a pretty incredible accomplishment.
Yeah, it really
17 years into your career. And you're still mixing it up and putting up numbers you've never put up before. That's pretty cool. Tracking the games in terms of the Western Conference, down in the bubble, the Suns have won and Memphis have won. So Portland's got to win tonight. I believe that means San Antonio is out. So Phoenix won 8-0 in the bubble. 8-0.
Wow. Booker was off the charts.
Oh, so good. Yeah. I saw someone posted a stat, like one of those, you know, crazy
who was it, Nate Silver type stats.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Nate Silver, yeah.
That the chance of Phoenix going 8-0 was like 0.03% or whatever, based on the stats and the history. And they went 8-0. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, so, but for Devin Booker, too, because all I knew him for was the guy that got like 60 points in a game once, mm-hmm. like a year and a half ago in February or something.
Yeah.
That's all I knew him for.
He's a player, man. He's a really quality player. Well, Draymond Green got fined $50,000 for telling him that he's got to get out of Phoenix on TNT.
I know. Is that a tampering? That was tampering, right?
Yeah, they called it tampering. But how's that tampering? Like, the guys, you want him to be on TV and you know, be a personality.
Say stuff, yeah.
And he's on one of your big partners.
Yeah, you can't fine him for that.
No, so what? He says he wants him out. What does that matter? How's that tampering? It was just ludicrous. And it's $50,000. Draymond Green's making like $30 million. He doesn't care.
Yeah, that's true.
So anyway, I think Portland's got to win tonight. That game tips off at 9 against Brooklyn. Tomorrow, Carlos Boozer is supposed to be on the show. Ray is back tomorrow. We got a lot cooking tomorrow afternoon with hockey, baseball, basketball, golf. The NFL's right around the corner. It's going to be a fun one. So we are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. We are back tomorrow at
3 Wood from 2:15 at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
At Scarborough Nissan, the health and safety of the community and their employees is a top priority. With extra safety measures in place, Scarborough Nissan welcomes you to experience the Rediscover the Road sales event on now, where you can finance a 2020 Nissan Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or receive an up to $5,000 cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, driving satisfaction on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden Avenue. Visit ScarboroughNissan.com.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.